Final case for this morning is Ronning against Colvin. Mr. Duncan.
Good morning. May it please the court. I am Dana Duncan. I represent Daphne R. Ronning in regards to a denial of disability pursuant to a decision by an administrative law judge. Ms. Ronning suffers from what's either called reflex sympathetic dystrophy or complex regional pain syndrome. Social Security Administration, because of the strange nature of this medical condition, has established a specific ruling interpreting their regulations and providing guidelines to administrative law judges for assessing this condition. In this particular case, Ms. Ronning suffers from a left hand injury. The injury was, in the opinion of at least one doctor, Dr. Eiley, a permanent condition. It resulted in pain, which Ms. Ronning describes as the equivalent to having her hand slammed in a car door.
Now, as I understand it, you know, she keeps the hand in one position, which RSD people would do, but the residual functional capacity assessment takes that into account, and the jobs that the vocational expert identifies, for instance, a hostess, right? Wasn't that one of them? I mean, it seems like you could do that even if you'd had your left arm amputated. I mean, you can greet people pleasantly and say, go to table 16 or whatever. So why, this isn't really about the left hand, it seems to me. If something is making her disabled, it's more than that.
Correct. And in fact, my note that I was going to argue is this is not a situation of a person who's missing a left hand or a left arm. This is more. This is a person who can't use the arm or hand due to pain, the fact that she's guarding it, and the fact that she experiences this great pain causes her to both guard it. It's going to limit her ability. For instance, if one is constantly holding their left arm in a guarding position, it's going to affect how fast and how well she performs other tasks with her right hand.
Why does it affect what she would do in the jobs that the vocational expert identified?
Well, for instance, if somebody is experiencing pain that's the equivalent of having your hand slammed in a car door for extended periods of time, that's going to cause a significant disruption in their everyday activities, how well they function. Even as a hostess, you're expected to be pleasant. You're expected to be able to carry menus. You're expected to guide people to the table. If you're in constant pain, that's going to affect your ability to perform those regular duties on a consistent basis. In fact, just the testimony from the former employer indicated that they had tried her in several different activities or different things. And even though things like taking an inventory, which would have, with a clipboard, I'm sure would have allowed her to use one hand.
Well, she would have had to carry a clipboard. I mean, I'm not sure that those trial runs were quite the same as the more restricted field of jobs that were identified in this case. That's a problem.
Sure. If it were just...
Well, I noted at one point she was referred to as a cook, and that when she fell, she was described as the manager of the restaurant in which she fell. Was she a manager?
The term manager, my understanding it was at a Hardee's fast food restaurant when she injured the hand. Managers can mean different things. It can be the overall manager. It could be a shift manager. It could be a night manager. They have different levels of supervisory capacity. I don't think the record, Judge, clearly indicates what specific level of manager she was. She had some managerial duties, is my understanding.
Thank you.
Again, I guess the point I'm making, and this is why the whole issue of credibility comes into play here, That is there has to be an assessment as to whether she can do this job on a full-time basis. If you're in constant pain and constant concern about the pain and the arm and bumping the arm, which from what I'm understanding from medical literature is quite, it can cause quite excruciating pain, you're going to be very limited in your ability to perform 8 hours a day, 5 days a week on a consistent basis. That's the level that's required for Social Security disability. If you cannot perform those, you're disabled as a matter of law pursuant to the regulations established by the commissioner. In fact, the judge, in his second hypothetical, implied that by the fact of if she could not perform her duties on a consistent basis, would she be disabled? And yes, the answer from the vocational expert was indeed the case, that she couldn't.
So how strong is the record that the pain is that high? She takes a lot of medication. She takes hydrocodone. She takes trazodone. She takes different things. Is the problem the pain, or is the problem the side effects of the medications, which are used to address the pain? She uses the word sore at the hearing, right? Not pain.
She uses sore on a consistent basis, but she does describe specifically that when she does have muscle cramping, that the pain gets to be severe enough that it is the equivalent of having your hand slammed in a car door. So there's going to be those pain, those levels. If you're pain to that extent, is your attention and concentration going to be interrupted for brief periods of time? If this happens on the average, say, 6 minutes out of an hour, that's 10% of your day you've lost as a result of this. Medical or the vocational testimony in several cases in multiple jurisdictions indicate if it's 10% or slightly more than 10% off task, you're not going to be able to maintain competitive employment because your production is going to be below what standards you normally should have. I think that what we're talking about is the issue of the credibility. I didn't want to get it too much into the issue of the listing because I think that's pretty self-explanatory by the briefs. Unfortunately, I wish that I could come in and argue specific case law that shows specific examples of how this works. But in my research and reading 100 and some cases, there's only one case I found at an appellate court level, and that was an unpublished decision in the Ninth Circuit, which basically didn't even address the listing or the Social Security ruling per se. So thank you.
You can save
the
a bit.
For rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
Thank you.
Mr. Martin.
Good morning. May it please the Court, John Martin on behalf of the Acting Commissioner. The first point I'd like to make is in response to something that Mr. Duncan said. Mr. Duncan brought up Dr. Eel. Dr. Eel, it's I-H-L-E, I'm not sure if I'm saying it right. Dr. Eel is one of the workers' compensation doctors who saw Ms. Ronning in approximately 2008. There are two workers' comp doctors. I think the other one is named Dr. Barron. Dr. Eel is the doctor who seems to be representing Ms. Ronning. Dr. Barron was so upset about what Dr. Eel said that Dr. Barron wrote a long report saying that he thinks Dr. Eel has limited her too much. However, Dr. Eel at TR-202 says that she's not reached maximum medical improvement, but he also says she may return to work light duty only, right hand arm, left hand is not to be used even as a helper. So Dr. Eel's findings are almost exactly the ALJ's findings in this case. The ALJ found that she was limited to light work, and there's really no controversy about her ability to do light work. She herself testified that with her right hand she can lift 25 pounds. Light work has a maximum lifting capacity of 20 pounds. There's no allegation that she's limited in any way in her ability to stand and walk or to sit.
So, right, we break these things down unbelievably. So it seems to me the real question is evidence in the record. Once we have her not using the left hand, for all I know, putting a sling around it so that she's not even tempted to use it, and she's doing exclusively things that require the right hand, maybe, you know, hostess, furniture rental consultant, or surveillance system monitor, whatever, something that she can dictate, perhaps, instead of write, is she still left with either enough pain that she's incapacitated a couple of days a month or a couple of hours a day or something that would make her unable to work, or is she incapacitated in some other way? She doesn't really develop the depression point, so I don't think that's one that's really before us. But that strikes me as the question, because you can kind of hypothesize the hand is out of the way, and we still have other issues in this case.
Well, the other issues were really not developed. When she went to see her doctor, she tended to downplay her pain. I think one time she went in to see her doctor, and she rated her pain as only a 4 on that famous 1 to 10 scale. Another time, I think she said it's a 5 or a 6. I think what Mr. Duncan is talking about is she says when it goes into spasm, and she didn't really specify how often it went into spasm, that's when she said she could get that severe pain. But the reason for the credibility finding here, and I think one thing we need to make sure about with the credibility finding is, in the main, the ALJ believed Ms. Ronning. Ms. Ronning came into court, or came into her doctors and said, and everybody believes her, I can't use my left arm. And there's no question about that.
Right. Everybody agrees she's got RSD, and RSD is a real thing, and doctors treat it. Actually, it's one of those things better treated early than later because the damage becomes unaddressable at some point. But then what is the question?
And our answer to that is that she has not really developed that. She has had very limited treatment. She got some treatment. It seemed like the treatment was helping her, and then either because her insurance company was paying for other things or they just didn't want to pay for this, the insurance company pretty much stopped helping her with this particular impairment. And her treatment now, for instance, I can't remember if it's when she sees Dr. Eel or Dr. Barron, but in roughly February of 2008, one of those doctors says she's really not getting any treatment right now. The only treatment she is getting are the medications, which at that point were the hydrocodone and trazodone. And that was the entirety of her treatment. And, again, what we have in this record is a person coming into her doctors and saying, my pain is at a 4, so it's hard for me to say that her pain is really as severe as she's alleging. And that's one of the other basis of the ALJ's credibility finding, as he said she complained about things that really weren't there. She alleged a lot of side effects from the medication. She did not complain to her doctors about that. She alleged that her left shoulder hurt. The tests show that she doesn't have a problem with her left shoulder, and that's why the ALJ felt there was some exaggeration here.
Seemed to come out of nowhere, yeah. Okay. And do you have anything you wanted to say about SSR 03-2P? I mean, that's clearly the agency's effort to rationalize this particular disorder.
Well, our position is that the ALJ followed the dictates of 0032P, Social Security ruling, and that is that he observed that there is no particular listing that addresses this RSD or complex regional pain syndrome. Therefore, he said, well, she's got a musculoskeletal impairment. I'm going to evaluate it under the musculoskeletal impairments. They require limitations on two limbs. There's no question. She only has a limitation of one limb. So our position is certainly that the ALJ followed that listing, and we would ask the court to affirm the ALJ's decision. Thank you.
Okay. Anything further, Mr. Duncan?
Just briefly. Thank you. Well, it seems a little implausible to believe that doctors would be prescribing trazodone and hydrocodone for a condition that does not have significant pain. With that medication, she describes her arm as being sore. So one can only imagine the level of pain that would exist. Otherwise, the fact is the judge in this particular case made a few findings. He noted the shoulder. The pain radiates. That seems to be a constant thing with this condition. He points to the fact that she has a full range of motion. This has nothing to do with an actual orthopedic injury, which would reduce the range of motion. This is a pain injury. He then points to that she has never reported any side effects of medication. Okay, but that medication generally has side effects from all medical information available. She indicates that no doctor completed a disability report. Well, if the doctor would have said she's disabled, that would have been ignored because that supposedly is the ultimate question being answered. As I tell doctors consistently, that's not the issue. Everybody can work unless they're in a coma. That's the issue ultimately is whether there's significant work given the limitations. Then he notes the sporadic work history and the workers' comp issue. And so I don't think that there's a long and very weighty decision or with regard to the credibility. Then briefly, with regard to the listing, the judge says, yeah, the specific listing applies, 1.02B, but you do need two limbs. But it also talks about mental illness, and it implies that the mental illness listings apply. And as I indicated in the brief, those should have at least been considered as for an equals. I'm out of time. So.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We will take the case under advisement, and the court will be in recess.